Except prelude to our song list. It does require quite a bit of guitar retuning, which is getting real boring, but I'm padding now. We're going to try and make sure there's not too much dead air. Look, in lieu of having any real guitar talent, Doctor and I have spent a lot of years writing songs on different tunes. If you can't, like, once you've sort of written as many songs as you can with D, C, G, A minor, and you're not good enough to make any new shapes, you have to retune your guitar like Doctor and I do. And I think Doctor said he's got 12 different tunings in tonight's
set. Yeah, yeah.
But it is a friendly set.
Yeah, I mean, what it, you retune and you still end up writing songs in D, A, and G.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just different. That's exactly
just,
right.
You kid yourself that you're not.
You kid yourself you're an artist, but it's still D, G, C, A minor.
Coxy Doctor, Doug and Ted, JD on the Turago bed, Fobes Podcast.
Rising Blow.
Wow.
Yeah, Michael's a big fan. What inspired you to re-record it? Was it always one you thought that got away?
Yeah, interesting. I know a guy called Cal, who managed us very briefly, really liked the song. And I must have just sat down one day and fooled around with it on acoustic and thought, oh, I can make this more of a, it's a bit more of a straight ahead song like this. But why I went to everybody and said, let's re-record this, I've got no memory of how that took place. Yeah, or yeah, why I thought it was worth re-recording. I've lost in the sand.
It's definitely an improvement. It's a really nice song.
It's amazing how it turned out. Did you realise that it might have turned out that well in terms of just that clearness and the guitar and the riffage? And
yeah, I think I just thought that the original was at a time when we were really into the idea of putting a lot, just fucking songs up to a degree. You know, like we did it at the end of Marble Arse, which was, you know, a really a great sort of pop song that Doctor wrote, but we couldn't just rest there. We had to put this sort of noise bit at the end of the song. And Rising Blow was sort of like that. Although I do think I first wrote the riff, I had my Ibanez flanger on that song and that was always there. But yeah, I must have just been fooling around one day and thought, I want to take all that excess away. There's sort of an okay song there, you know, quite a simple, nice sort of song. And when we were, that's whatever session it was, my memory is that it was at Hot House in St Kilda in Melbourne. We just, banged it out. It became B-side, the alternative version, Not a well, you know, not a, a song that, it was pretty late on Drive Through Charisma and, not an easy song probably to get into on first listen.
I doubt the doctor's ever asked, oh, can we revisit one of my songs? Or has he?
Nah, doctor tends to move on. Doctor get, you know, he's not somebody who, he turns on his own material very quickly as well. So, he's not somebody. And consequently, you know, some of his songs have been very, very hard done by in terms of not making it onto records when they really should have, because he just doesn't go into bat for his own material. And I can think of a couple of songs that really should have been on records that never got there. Great songs that ended up just as B-sides because Doctor just like, whatever, you know, I don't care.
You told me you've got that policy. You generally do not visit recording things that are left off except for Back to Being Me and one or two other examples. That's your policy.
Yeah, that's right. That's Back to Being Me is the only, pretty much the only one I can think of that got, that was written for a different record than the one it appeared on. Mostly if your song doesn't make it on that record, it's gone. So I think some really good songs have gone with that policy, but it's just the way it operates. It's very difficult to get anybody interested in, what about that? I always like blah, blah, like, whatever, not interested. So, there's a lot of stuff gets culled.
What happens like with the self-titled album where it's only 10 or 11 tracks? It's like he could have resurrected some things for that, flesh that out a bit more.
Yeah, I've got demos of lots of songs that I liked that we never learnt, you know, because, I mean, there's also the songs that just never get learnt by the band, and there's scores and scores of them, you know. I've got all the demos of them that just nobody ever, you know, the band... Like, you know, I've always made the mistake, like I'll give the band, you know, or back when it was CDs, a CD of 20 songs. And the second half of the CD, they'd never even listened to, you know. So consequently, there's just a lot of songs that never even come into consideration. Back to Being Me, again, we've moved off the record we're supposed to be talking about, but that only came, like Ted always really liked the song. And then when Good Times Go Good, Magini and Wayne were going, they seemed to think we didn't have enough good material. And they were like, oh, have you got anything else? And Ted's like, oh, what about Back to Being Me? And, they sort of seemed to like, But, generally songs, they just, they don't make it for that record. They're gone forever.
Hey, Damien here with my thoughts on the Sunbury 97 CD single cover version or is it a reimagining of their own song Rising Blow, which was, I guess, maybe, is it a strange choice for a cover? The original Rising Blow, would you describe that as a deep cut, John? A deep cut from the first album? That original, I actually don't mind too much. I don't love it, but I don't mind it. I get the feeling it's probably not a favourite of yours, John. But I think it had a certain darkness and intensity to it, which appealed to me. It was kind of slower, that slower, kind of sludgy, almost a swampy kind of vibe. Glance by a rising blow. But I think the problem with it was that, like a lot of that album, it sounded like a cool, dark little two-minute song stretched out to 4 or 5 minutes with a long guitar intro and outro. But here they are, like a few years later, with a reimagining and... Dunno. It's fine. It's shorter. It is shorter. It is about 2 minutes, so that's a plus. It is lighter and poppier, so it doesn't have any of that slow, what did I say, that sludgy, dark vibe, which is what I liked. So that's not there. To be honest, I think Coxie's vocals sound a little unenthusiastic, not overly inspired, but look, it's fine, I guess, a bit of a curio. I don't know if there's any story behind it, John, but I get the feeling that maybe they had made the decision to redo one of their own songs, and instead of doing, you know, The Driver Is You or Misguided Modeling Career or something like that that has all those tempo changes and weird arrangements, they would have just gone, let's just do Rising Blow. All it is, it's just two verses. There's no chorus, nothing like that. We can smash it out in 10 minutes. Coxie would have gone, okay, Doctor, can you give me a bit of Dougie, can you give me a bit of Jack, a bit of and then I'll just do the lyrics over the top. Glance by Rising Blow, and then it's done, and there you go. It's fine. It is what it is.
And it's a much more polite take on the nastier recording that's on Drive Thru Charisma. I really like the version on Drive Thru Charisma. I enjoy that kind of adventurous spirit that they sometimes got into with noise, and I suppose that was a bit of a Sonic Youth influence, but at least the first minute of the version on the album is very noisy, got all kinds of things going on, but the song itself is, well, I'm not a recording engineer or anything like that, but to my ear it sounds pretty drenched in reverb and effects and things like that, and I really like it, but I think I've got to say I prefer this version. It's a really dry and close recording. It must be a demo of sorts, but there's no reverb to be found on anything here. Dry as a chip. The guitars gallop along and on top of the... the guitars gallop along on top of Jack's overdriven bass. It almost sounds like Jack's playing chords sometimes, or maybe like an arpeggiated bass, but I really like the effect that it gives. This version for me. Good song, Rising Blow.
I guess they were throwing out B-side ideas, and this was around the time they were doing the Australian rock covers, and they decided to cover their own song. But, do you have a slight... I think you have a preference for the B-side version, yeah?
Yeah, but I'll just sort of go over it a little bit. Why, now that we sort of kind of talked about most of what's happening with the song in terms of the original version... And like you just said, John, like they get straight into it within 20 seconds. This catchy riff, you hear it, and it's only a 2-minute song compared to 3.5 or whatever it is on the original song. And it still tells a story nice and neat. I can hear that riff clearly. And there's still sort of distorted guitars, but not overdriven much. And it's still got those wailing sounds, just more subtle in the B-side version.
Well, first of all, so the song's generally in G minor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, and then B flat, C, G minor. That's basically the verse. That's really the whole song.
Yeah.
And then it stops for the sort of... which is sort of either C, C, G minor, or G minor, C. And then the B-side version has that sort of galloping guitars, like horse riding, like... which is sort of more a effects thing on the album version. I mean, I like both versions of this song.
Mm.
I think they... And then, of course, the acoustic version has sort of like a jazzy bit where after the... It's like A minor, C, which is sort of jazzy. But the album version, the electric version, sort of does this ascending distortion thing, which I can't really work out, but it's all sort of in G minor.
Yeah, the acoustic version sort of does this thing where it's got do 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 do. You can hear the riff, but then you hear the like the other melody going, like just a sort of a harmony down lower. They're going up, and they're going kind of down. So it's really quite effective. Like, this is why probably another one of the main reasons why I really enjoy the Foves in general, and I probably notice it especially more as the later on they go, where they're just being consistent with, they know where they're at, you know, after quite a few years, and complex guitar things like happening, doing different things, as we've been talking about, like harmonics, even especially especially on this album Drive Through Careers, where we talked about Marble Arse, we talked about the different guitars doing different things, Ghosting the Road, the different melodies on top of it. So it's, and you don't notice it, you always notice a main kind of riff or some things, but it really does add to that extra thickness and creativity of their music. And it's not just, oh, we'll just chuck this over on top. I mean, even if they say if it's their early career and they're still learning how to write and doing stuff, they're experimenting really well. They're writing pretty good and quite full. So this does have it in the acoustic version, as obviously, as well as the original. But yeah, John, I kind of agree with you. I do like both, but it really took me hearing it, just getting straight into it, 20 seconds, and this is a song, 2 minutes. Hear that, go, wow, you really appreciate, go back to the original, wow. Now I can really like it more and more and more, and appreciate
on the same page. Getcha. Yeah,
appreciate the whole helmet thing and all those people that they were influenced at the time, and Sonic Youth. Yeah,
100%, Michael. If it wasn't for the B side, I would never have thought to go back to listen to the original. So, in that degree, to that respect, the sequel is probably a bit better. But the first one has its. I mean, the first thing is suffers the snare sound. A lot of this album, the snare's off or whatever. It has that early 90s sound. The playing's great, of course. And it towards the end, there's a little bit of an outro and it sounds like Dougie's hitting trash cans or something. Maybe he's got a different snare, yeah.
But the B-side version also sort of does like a harmonic thing, like a ding 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 in the middle, and then it does it at the end. And that was really cool. It's just something kind of different that you're not going to get that sound from the original. Like, they're focusing on chorus, distortion, delay, whatever, moaning and all, wailing and things. They just go ding, you know, that when you play that harmonic on a chord in the middle and the drums going with it, and then they do it at the end. And that was really cool. But, yeah, that's I suppose that's all of me with the music for both of the songs.
That just reminded me, there's a bit of the guitar. I don't know what fret it is, but it sort of almost sounds like a light keyboard. It's so high and shimmering. I think it's the bit you were talking about then in the A minor, C minor bit, or whatever the A minor C is in the electric version. But, yeah, we haven't talked about the lyrics yet, have we? Feels like a rising blow from underneath and up I go, forever into those blue hills, shedding arms and growing gills. So there's a bit of reverse evolution there. Maybe like Coxie wants to go back to the sea because man crawled out of the sea and then become an ape. But here it's about, I'd rather go back to the, you know, rather crawl back into the sea. Rising blow, when you think of that sort of expression, you think of some colonial thing like Star Wars or something, you know, a blow against the Empire or a blow against the rebels' hopes or... let me put my head into your armpit. So it's sort of like Doctor's tame. I don't know. He's sort of, it's like his let me be your toilet, I guess. There's an unreleased Coxie solo song called Alternative Lifestyle, where he talks about an armpit needing no razor and like a future utopia where everyone's okay with their body odors. So where it's warm and where it's wet underneath his armpit. So I don't know. Is it about evolution, Michael, or
I really don't know. Yeah. I can't figure it out. And when you, the way you've just presented that to me now, that kind of makes sense, and I'd go with that. Otherwise, I couldn't figure out what he's trying to say, or where he's trying to go with it, or what other meaning it could have to me or the world or to someone else. I just wouldn't know, except for that explanation you just gave us.
Let me put my head in your armpit where it's warm and wet. So not a perfect rhyme with armpit and wet, but maybe he's saying that, like, you know, there's more bacteria on the human body than there is in the entire world, like under your armpit.
Okay.
Tomorrow's just another word. or Another Day. So yeah, that's obviously, there's a Bob Dylan song with that lyric, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Glance by a Rising Blow. I Don't Want to Run, I Want to Go. Tomorrow When the Sun's Still Down, Creeping Through This Sleeping Town. Don't know if he's talking about Muriduck or Mornington there. Forgotten Like a Boring Year, Enough to Show That I Was Here. Kill Me in a Fever Dream. Well, I don't know what the lyric is, but on the single, the B-side, he changes. He says, kill me in a fever dream, see me when I want to scream, which is a bit different on the Charisma version.
Rising Blow? Is it about devolution of human species back to the ocean?
Yeah, it's probably not a bad summation.
They went quite well. I like that song.
Yeah, that was all. I liked it better when we did the acoustic version of it on somewhere.
Yeah, because I was going to point my... Did you prefer that, the B-side on one of the...
Oh, Sunbury. Yeah.
Sunbury. Did you prefer that than the original? Yeah, I was going to ask. Okay,
I reckon when it was paired back, it wasn't a bad track, yeah.
I've written good Hendrix stuff at the start, Imitation.
Yeah.
Rising Blow.
I was on an episode the other day. I hope you tuned in for the Understanding Caius. I tell you what, I hate listening to myself. Oh,
do you?
Oh, yeah.
Ah, you're all right. I reckon I sound like I might have a brain injury, which I might have, but I don't know. Undiagnosed brain injury?
Anywho.
okay, Dragster for Christmas. So this one sounds like somebody's been listening to Soundgarden. Okay, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what it sounds like. You have a very riff-heavy song. It's catchy, it's kind of angular, it's edgy, right? And one of the reasons that is, I mean, the guitar tone is great. It's kind of dirty, it's nasty, but it's also in 5/4 time signature. So, one and two and three and four and five and one and two and three. But the drums are playing 4/4. So it's a very interesting juxtaposition. You know, a lot of times that doesn't work. You know, and so if you're counting the drums, it's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like the snare's on 2 and 4, but the 5/4 guitar riff is overlaid over that, so it wraps around it. You know, sort of all comes back together again in a familiar way, but it takes a couple of measures to do it right. So it's very interesting. 5/4 over 4/4. You just don't really hear a lot of that, and it completely works in this song. And I wish more bands messed around with it. Like I said, there's something about it that's Soundgarden-esque to me. The drums, you know, on the verse are pretty tight. Dude's playing the hi-hats. It's, you know, kind of he's got some syncopated kick pattern. And then, of course, the Dragster, the chorus, and even the pre-chorus, they play that in 4/4. So it kind of straightens out, right? Everybody's playing in 4/4. And you don't have that riff, the 5/4 riff. But, you know, and it opens up and the drummer's playing the ride. He's playing some crashes. So it has a feeling of opening out into a big straightaway, right? Especially if you're thinking about Dragsters, racing. The chorus is like the straightaway, but then of course they go back into the 5/4 riff with the 4/4 drums underneath, and you're like, oh shit, this feels like, you know, like you have to grip the steering wheel again. It's edgy. You're going around the turn, or I don't know, maybe your wheels are caught on fire, maybe the parachute's not gonna fully stop you in the back of the Dragster. I don't know, but it has a crazy frenetic feel again. And then again, it hits the chorus and you're back on like a straightaway. And then they also have that very punctuated gizh, 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 gizh. They do it once in the middle, I think. And they end the song like that. And again, you're like, I don't know, man, did the Dragster crash? Is that just the car smashing against the wall over and over again? But they do capture the lyrics, you know, the riff, the music, the drums. It creates a mood and it creates a visual. Okay, suddenly looked and realized. So this is an up-tempo tune, kind of a happy tune. I hear some of The Who, maybe a little bit of Beatles, The Replacements, maybe The Kinks. What I notice is, you know, the drums are playing a poppy beat, moves along, but what you notice is the form of it, which is every four, you know, you have three measures of beat, and then the fourth measure, you know, the drummer takes pretty much the fourth measure is kind of open, and he, you know, fills over it. And each fill is different, right? I mean, you know it's coming, but they're always a little bit different, like, you know, or digga digga ding digga 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 digga, you know. So that part reminds me a little bit of The Who. And the form is very catchy. The form kind of reminds me a little bit of, I don't know, maybe The Kinks or something. Because you know it's coming, you know every fourth measure there's going to be a fill, but it's also a different fill every time. So it kind of keeps you on your toes, and it definitely gives the song motion and momentum, but it also feels familiar. Now, the interesting thing about this one is the verses feel kind of like wide open. right? But then you get to the chorus and it tightens up and the bass drum just kind of propels, and it's not as chaotic and it's not as white noisy and washy and, you know, it's not all that. It kind of tightens up and the dude's playing the hi-hats and it's much more of like a punchy driving thing. Then they get back out to the verse again and it opens up, you know, it's a little bit more sort of racing along towards those crazy fills at the end of the fourth, every four measures. Really catchy tune, and everybody's playing with a carefree attitude that comes across, and it's, you know, there's good hooks in there. Even though I can't sing any one exact fill back, it feels all very hooky. The fascinating thing, and what's really cool, is at the end there's like a little tag or maybe a coda at the end of the tune where this whole song's in 4-4, but then at the very end they bust out a little 5-4 and they end the tune like that. And that's just badass. That's great writing. That's to me, that's a band that had to sit there and really hash these things out in a room. And I don't know what their songwriting process was, but usually you're like, okay, you write the song, you got it, you're going on. Maybe that happens Tuesday, and you get together and you practice like the following Thursday, and then, you know, maybe another Wednesday. And then, you know, it might take, sometimes those ideas come to you immediately as a drummer. Sometimes they come after like a month and you just have this little idea and you just come into the rehearsal room with it and you go, you know what, let's put that on. Let's just end with that little 5-4 figure at the end of this otherwise poppy tune. So, I mean, I don't know. That type of great idea sometimes takes a while to germinate. And that's what's so fun about bands, is somebody had to come up with that. And then somebody else was like, man, that's a great idea. And then they all played it.
I'll tell you, and I might have mentioned it on the show before, is getting a guitar sound is harder than anything. I reckon miking up a guitar amp is the hardest thing in the world to do. Everyone says, oh, drums, like, drums are easy. Guitar amps, like, forget it. I got no idea. I'll readily admit I got no idea how to mic up a guitar amp. Like, and we're talking engineers, just the guy who goes out and puts mics in front of things.
Well, they're a hugely important part of it.
Oh, the biggest. Like, because you can move a guitar amp mic, you can move it a centimetre and it's gone.
Oh, hang on. Cole Freeman, engineer. Oh,
there you go.
Jeez, there's an Australian name.
Cole Freeman.
Cole.
Let's move that fucking mic over. Yeah, I bet you. What do you reckon Cole did after he knocked off? I reckon he
smoked rollies.
Oh.
Have you ever known a bloke called Cole who didn't smoke rollies?
No.
Doesn't exist.
Oh, maybe Cole Ridding. G'day, Cole.
Oh, please. Colin Ridding enjoyed cigarettes more than anyone in the universe. Back in the day, of course.
Yeah, back when you could, when they were healthy for you, when they were good for you. They're not good for you anymore.
We used to tease him that he had a built-in ashtray
on his leg. Yeah, where he had that cancer cut out or whatever.
Is that where you actually smoke, sir?
Oh,
you put them out in that? Can you feel it?
Slack.
Yeah, I know.